Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, April 16th, 2012. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers. I would like you to invite you to a special webinar that is being presented by abookin90days.com. Just go /webinar invite. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, The Surprising Sex Life of Animals and Plants, with my guest, Mary T. Batten, radio host and award-winning writer for television, film, and publishing. But first, I'd like to welcome all of you, my listeners. Whether you're listening live on the phone or on the website, some of you are in the chat room, and many of you are listening to this show after the fact from our archives. In any case, I'm honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell others about it who can benefit, and thanks to modern technology, it's very easy to do that. On my show page at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, right under my photo, you will see several ways to keep up with the show. The follow button will get the announcement and the reminder to you every week in your email. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about many ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. To get at that goal, each week I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, business success, career, you name it, all of those things which contribute to lasting happiness. In a moment, we will be starting today's episode. It has been pre-recorded with my guest, Mary Batten. Here we go. Today's episode is The Surprising Sex Life of Plants and Animals, with my guest, Mary Batten, radio host and award-winning writer for television, film, and publishing. Her many writing projects have taken her into tropical rainforests, astronomical observatories, scientific laboratories, and medical research centers. On her internet radio show, Exploring Nature with Mary Batten, each week she discusses the hidden aspects of nature from her ebook, How to Have Sex If You're Not Human. Mary is the author of many books. I'm just going to name a few. Please Don't Wake the Animals, a book about sleep. Who Has a Belly Button? And on, she's a long list of books that you'll have to explore. She has appeared on Oprah and various other television shows. Her magazine articles are published in a variety of publications, including Cosmopolitan, Ladies' Home Journal, Modern Maturity, Zoo News, and Science Digest, and many more. Mary was nominated for an Emmy for her work on the Children's Television Workshop science series 321 Contact, and she has written some 50 nature documentaries for television series, including the syndicated Wild Wild World of Animals, a Time Life Films production, and others for National Geographic and Disney Educational Films. Her magazine article for Science Digest, Sexual Choice, The Female's Newly Discovered Role, won the Newswoman's Club of New York's Front Page Award for Best Feature Story. She was editor of the Cousteau Society's award-winning membership magazine, Calypso Log, for 6 years. She is married to composer Ed Bland, and they have two children, a dancer choreographer, Stephanie Batten Bland, and her son Robert Bland, who is a writer. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Mary Batten. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Flora. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for making time to come on, because this is an exciting topic for me. From the moment I learned about your book. I went over and took a look at your site, and for whatever reason, maybe like other people, I just never had thought about the whole reproductive process that obviously animals and plants have to go through, just as we do, in order to keep their species alive. So I am so interested in this, and I want to know first how you got interested in the sex lives of animals and plants. Could you share that with us?
Well, it happened when I was working on the television series Wild, Wild World of Animals. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had a number of shows that dealt with the mating habits of this or that species. And as I was doing the research, I just got hooked on the subject matter because, I mean, what's more interesting than how animals mate? And, of course, what's more interesting to humans than sexual lives of human beings?
Exactly. Yeah, that's wonderful. And it is an interesting topic, and it's something that we don't readily think about, but as soon as we learn about it, we go, whoa. And I got deeper and deeper in reading about, even when it comes to plants, I could kind of understand animals. I didn't realize how much mating is going on in the plant kingdom.
Well, I think most people don't realize that they think plants, because they're rooted in one place and they can't mm-hmm. move around, that they're really not doing anything. But they are. They're some of the most outrageous tricksters in the living world. Because, okay, plants have an interesting problem. Mm-hmm. They can't move around and get from one to the other. So it takes three. Three is not a crowd with plants. Three is a necessity because they've got to seduce some mobile creature into coming to them and picking up their pollen and taking it to the next plant to fertilize the next plant. So they come out with, they have evolved all of these ruses. Now, the most well-known, of course, is nectar, which is like a sweet Slurpee for insects and various other animals, and they come to the blossoms. Oh, by the way, I have to say that blossoms are actually the sexual organs of plants.
When you said blossoms, that's the same as what we think of as flowers?
Flowers, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
The flowers are the sexual organs of plants exposed out there with colors and perfumes and nectar to attract the various pollinators that the plant needs in order to reproduce. And orchids are some of the most outrageous tricksters of all. I mean, there are some orchids that look like, smell like, and feel like a female wasp or a female bee, depending on its particular pollinator.
Mm-hmm.
And this tricks a male wasp or bee into trying to mate with the blossom that looks like a female. And they and they do this. It's just extraordinary.
This is amazing that the whole, first of all, the concept that it takes three of them because the plant is stationary. And then second is the way they've adapted the mechanism by which to, over time they've evolved these. So they didn't start that way centuries and centuries ago, but they've evolved to that, correct? To the blossoms.
That's right.
And all of that.
And it's a case of what is called coevolution, which means that the particular animal and plant have evolved in relationship, interacting with each other over such long periods of time, and it's thousands of years, thousands and thousands of years in some cases, such that they have a tight fit. In a sense, they have evolved in such a way that you could say they were made for each other. I mean, there's one orchid, for example, that is pollinated by only one species of bee. It has a trigger mechanism in the blossom that has to be activated by what a scientist calls the bee's knee. It's that specific. These coevolutionary relationships are that specific.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't there a song or an old expression about the bee's knees?
Well, it's an expression.
An expression.
If something is cute, I think it's as cute as a bee's knee.
Oh, okay. So did that that came from this particular bee that pollinates in this way?
I kind of doubt it.
Okay.
I wouldn't think so. I don't know how that expression originated,
mm-hmm.
but probably doesn't have anything to do with this orchid and that bee.
but nevertheless, so this, I have a friend who loves orchids and grows beautiful ones, so she's going to be really fascinated to learn about this. The orchids are some of the most gorgeous flowers around, and aren't they also pretty fragile? You know, don't you have to really have a special knack for growing orchids?
It depends.
Okay.
Some orchid growers will tell you that, oh, it's easy to grow orchids. I think it depends on the species.
Okay.
Whether it's, and some people really do, I think, have a green thumb.
Yes.
Then are just able to grow beautiful plants. I'm trying to learn to grow orchids right now because I love them. I think they are just absolutely gorgeous plants.
Mm.
In my case, I'm finding it kind of difficult.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, getting back to the orchids and their pollination strategies, there is a family of orchids that live in the tropics, Latin America, South America, that don't produce nectar. Now,
yeah.
They attract their bees, and they are pollinated only by male bees of the euglossine family. These are beautiful, jewel-colored, iridescent bees.
Mm.
So the orchids attract these particular bees with perfumes.
Hmm.
And they produce about 200 different varieties of perfumes. And scientists have actually analyzed a number of these. One smells like oil of wintergreen. One smells like a Dior perfume. But the bees come and they collect these fragrance chemicals and they store them in tissue in their hind legs.
Oh.
Now, for a long time, nobody knew what the bees were doing with these things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still kind of a question about what they're doing with them. Some people think that they use them to attract female bees.
Uh-huh.
And some people think they use them to attract other males, because there are some species of animals where the males come together in a group,
mm-hmm.
to impress the females. Instead of going, you know, one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
These males have to come together in a group, and the females come at like shoppers to a shopping mall, and they look over the males and observe them and take their time choosing which one or ones they're going to mate with. So
mm-hmm.
this whole system is known as a LEK, L-E-K.
L-E-K.
And these are the species where the male has nothing to offer the female except his genes.
Okay.
There's no resources of any kind, no food, doesn't help with building the nest, doesn't help with bringing up the kids. The only thing they have are their genes. And the females are not even going to pay any attention to them if they're by themselves.
Okay. So
that
sounds kind of like humans to me.
Well, doesn't it sound like a singles bar?
Yes, it sort of sounds like a singles bar. And it also sounds like if a guy doesn't have too much else going on, if he's good looking and smells good, and he has to be pretty charming if he doesn't have in any other redeeming qualities, as you pointed out with this particular species. This is amazing. And the other thing, when you were talking about fragrances, I thought about the fact that as women, and men too, of course, use cologne, that we use perfumes and colognes to attract mates to us, or to get people interested, potential mates. So did we get that from the plants, or, you know, how is that something that we learn from plants as humans?
Well, I think, first of all, as Darwin pointed out more than 150 years ago, all living things strive mightily to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, reproduction is the name of the game in biology.
Mm-hmm.
And humans, I think, have been inspired by the animal world. We have used plants to make perfumes, and perfumes are marketed to people, to women in particular, and now more and more to men. You know, enhance your odor is what it's saying.
Yes.
Smell
right.
good. Nobody's going to want you if you smell bad. So
mm-hmm.
humans use an array of things to attract each other: perfumes, cosmetic surgery, hair dye. jewelry, and men especially who are flashing their credit cards. They sometimes are driving more expensive cars than
That's
they
right.
can afford. They are trying to dress in the latest fashion. And recently a study done of men's courtship habits showed that they tend to actually flash their iPads and their cell phones, whereas women, this study showed that women tend to keep their cell phones in their purses.
Mm-hmm.
But men, if they sit down at a bar, the first thing they might do is take their cell phone out of their pocket and place it on the counter. And it's hilarious, but it's a courtship device.
Wow.
So
it's
amazing. Yeah, humans use whatever they think
whatever
will enhance their desirability
mm-hmm.
to the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a lot of it's deception.
Sure. That's true. Now, what the one you just shared about the bee, is that the one of the most unusual mating habits that plants or animals exhibit? Or is there another unusual one you could share with us?
Well, to me, one of the wildest ones are the sex-changing fishes in the Caribbean.
Okay.
This is not a joke. This really happens.
Sex-changing fishes.
The sex-changing fishes. They're a group of fishes called wrasses, also known as cleaner fish, because they clean parasites off of much larger fish.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the societies are headed by a dominant female and some by a dominant male. Well,
mm-hmm.
in the RAS society that's headed by a dominant female, if anything happens to her, if she dies a natural death or if she's eaten by a predator, that means they have no leader of their group.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? The largest female, within 1/2 hour, starts biologically undergoing a sex change to become a male.
Whoa.
Even if she's carrying a belly full of eggs.
Whoa.
And within 2 weeks, that new male that was formerly a female can inseminate females and release sperm. That, to me, is
That's
just
amazing.
The most extraordinary thing that I know of. And, of course, the opposite happens in the societies that are headed by a dominant male.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I wonder how many decades, centuries did it take for them to evolve, because that's an adaptation.
Probably millions of years.
Yeah, to get to that. And it was done to adapt for their survival.
Well, it was just, nobody will ever know how, by what steps, the
mm-hmm.
evolutionary process went through to
mm-hmm.
to reach that point, because, of course, evolution is going on all the time.
Sure.
We just don't normally see it because it happens in time spans much greater than any human lifespan.
Sure,
so we don't see these steps, and so nobody really knows how
mm-hmm.
it came about, but it's all, of course, in the interest of reproduction.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
One of the most powerful factors in reproduction is female mate choice.
Okay.
And the way that affects evolution is that females choose mates for certain resources. They want,
mm-hmm.
if it's animals, they want strength, they want health, They want a, if you're a bird, for example, you want a male that's going to help build the nest, help take care of the young. But there's certain characteristics of males that just are attracted to females because they're pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, the well-known peacock has this elaborate, beautiful, shimmering set of rump feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these evolved under the power of female mate choice because these feathers don't serve any purpose in reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
But females have obviously liked them over many generations, and so then you get an exaggeration as the females choose the males with the most beautiful, elaborate rump feathers. Those genes for those rump feathers get passed on to future generations of sons.
Okay.
And so you get an exaggeration of the feathers, or in the case of deer, the elaboration of the antlers. And when Darwin first was writing and developing his evolution theory, it was really a puzzle to him why males had these elaborate characteristics. He called them secondary sex characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that they had evolved because females liked them.
Yes.
So one scientist said to me that males tend to be what females want them to be. They tend to look the way females want them to look. They tend to act the way females want them to look because those genes are passed on to the sons.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. What can we learn from other animals that applies to humans?
Well, I think we can learn a lot, Flora, because we're animals.
Mm-hmm.
We're members of the group of primates. We're members of the family of apes. And with respect to the apes, we share 98.6 of our DNA with chimpanzees, for example.
Wow.
Now, so there's a small fraction that's specific to humans. Of course, that small fraction accounts for a huge amount of differences. But by studying the mating habits of other animals, I think it throws a light on the deceptions, for example, that we practice.
Mm-hmm.
On how now female mate choice operates pretty much the same across the animal kingdom, from fruit flies to human beings. Females are going for males with resources, and of course what defines resources is going to differ between a fruit fly and a human being, but basically the process is the same.
Right, right.
And we have males across the animal kingdom that do everything, anything, and everything they can to subvert female choice, and we see that going on today, right now, today, in the 21st century. We have men in our society who are passing all these laws to try to place women's bodies really under the governorship of the state.
Yes, yes.
It's extraordinary to me that we've got human beings, and they right now are aligned with one major political party, and we know what that is. That's the Republicans, and they're passing these bills to limit and even ban access to contraception. Well, you know, this is an attempt to take us back hundreds of years. This is a very current example of how men, to me, are acting like insects, because insects try to control females by actually secreting a genital glue that plugs up the female's genital orifice so that a rival male cannot mate with her. Okay, men in the medieval times used chastity belts. So human version of insects' genital glue. And now they're using legislation to really accomplish the same thing. So I think we can learn a great deal by studying the animal mating habits.
This is amazing. Before we run out of time, would you please tell listeners how they can learn more about your work? Where is the best place to go to learn about the variety of things you're doing and about your book, your current book, your newest book?
I think my website, which is www.marybatten.com, and the book we've been discussing, How to Have Sex If You're Not Human, is an e-book that's marketed on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay.
And the other book, Sexual Strategies, How Females Choose Their Mates, can be purchased anywhere.
Okay. And I bet if we went to Amazon.com and put in your name, Mary Batten, B-A-T-T-E-N, we also would get a list of your books and your current e-book and so forth that way also, right?
That's right. They have all of my books.
That's beautiful. I want to thank you so much for making time to share. This is fascinating. I'm going to invite you back because this is going to take longer to go into than we've given it today. But this is absolutely fascinating, and it reminds us that we're not as different as we think that we are from animals and other animals and plants. And hopefully we can learn from them something to at least better understand ourselves, if not improve ourselves.
Well,
so
thank
you so much. Yes, thank you so much, Mary. I want to urge all of you who have been enlightened, encouraged, empowered by today's episode to share what you've learned with your family, your friends, your colleagues. And remember, a recording of the episode will be here on my radio site at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, where you can return at any time to hear it. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing you again next week.